Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about the Season 9 finale titled The Storm. We all knew it was coming after last week's title. I think
hard
we all
sneak
knew.
Up on you.
Yeah. So The Storm is finally here. Aaron, it's the last episode of the season. What did you think of it?
I thought it did a real good job of doing most of the things it was setting out to do. You know, getting us on parking the Whisperer arc for the season finale, developing some more character relationships, didn't overstay its welcome. It wasn't like a super stuffed 90-minute episode that had a whole bunch of shit that you were like rolling your eyes through. I tell you what, when I was watching this episode for the first time, I saw it was written by my old longtime Watching Dead fans will know that Matthew Negrete, Mr. Timon and Pumbaa, Mr. Power Rangers, he has long been a herald of doom. When you see his name on the masthead, oh God, what's he going to do to my favorite characters now? Mm-hmm. And then I saw directed by Greg Nicotero, and I'm thinking, oh my God, we're going to be this is a winter storm. We're going to be shooting day for night. This is going to be some rough budgetary shit.
Shooting summer for winter.
We're gonna have some problems here. But it's still executively produced by Miss Kang and co-written by her. It just goes to show you the power of a showrunner, because I thought most of the stuff that they set out to do in this episode was pretty good. And there's a couple things that, like, I've been waiting all season to hear why the kingdom is so unlivable, but I feel like that they deliberately dodged the question, which puts it into kind of like when Geordi comes on the main screen and says, the quantum inverters have gone ape shit and we got 30 seconds before a warp core breach. I don't know, but something finally broke and there's no heat and fires raged out of control and all the roofs are gone in the kingdom. This place is unlivable. You know what? The phases were inverted. This place had to be abandoned. The saucer had to be separated and crashed onto, and now they're having to go to Hilltop. I'm satisfied. Jim, what did you think?
But the difference there being that Geordi usually spends the rest of the episode figuring out why the fuck the Hilltop died, or the kingdom died, rather, and the phaser banks aren't working and the deflector shield is inverted. This doesn't seem to care to spend the rest of the episode doing that. This cares only that we believe, for really no reason other than Ezekiel says it, that the kingdom is somehow unsustainable. And that's like one of the biggest problems I had with this, is they did a piss poor job this season of portraying like why the kingdom is unlivable.
I agree.
The best they ever do is bust a couple pipes. And I'm thinking, okay, but you don't actually need running water in order to have a fortification there, right? Like you still have food, you still have buckets. Tell me the blacksmith is so poor and stupid that he can't make a bucket. It's like,
well, you'd have to go find him an example of one first.
I know, you'd have to go to the Natural History Museum and dig up an ancient Mayan bucket, and maybe the guy could figure it out.
A Paleolithic bucket for him to work with.
So, they did a terrible job with that. Overall, like, the season is so much better than the last season and the last string of seasons that I have very few complaints overall. This episode was mostly good. I have some problems with, like, the weather sometimes. I have some questions about, like, where do the Whisperers go? Are they, like, geese? Do they migrate for the winter out of the area and then back? Like,
I don't, this doesn't need to be a 90 minute episode, but it might have needed to be a 55 minute episode, because the smash cut to the Whisperers in spring, it was bizarre.
I guess which spring was that, the previous or the next? I really don't know. Like, there's no context for it, and they don't tell me. Like, they kind of imply that they were out of the area, but how do you get so far out of that area and then migrate back in a season when you have that many people? Like, I've played Oregon Trail. It takes months and months to get hundreds of miles. with an entire community.
So if I was a migrating community, I think I might get the fuck out of Cincinnati around sometime in October. And by the time I walk to, say, Atlanta, that's not a terrible walk, right? The
trouble is you can't walk there. You got to shamble there because you're a walker. So you're walking mile an
maybe
hour.
Maybe leave in September then.
Okay.
But I feel like you can make it to some place like, because you don't have to get to like fucking Miami. You don't need to be on the beaches of pina coladas with your zombies. You just need to be out of the hard freeze, right?
I mean, you got to be out of temperatures that humans can't withstand without things like shelter.
But to your point, these are the details I kind of crave. I would really like for them to lean in and see, that I understand that it would rob the scenes of tension if you knew the whispers like migrate south for the winter, right? Mm-hmm. But like then I think there's a way for you to do this as kind of a coda, like at the end of everything, that you could explain kind of like where they're at in some kind of concrete way, and maybe even show them like as the storm is sweeping over the area, like Alpha can look behind her and see this like just blackness that they're leaving, and Beta can be say something about like when we return to the hunting lands we'll have to be sharper, and then he can whip her or whatever. But yeah, no, I think they definitely but they already had their idea for a hammer, which was the garbled transmission that no one's going to hear, and that kind of got in the way of the thing that setting up that whatever the fuck that's going to be got in the way of explaining what's actually going, which minor in the scheme of things, but I do wish they were a little bit better at it.
The thing that I really like about this episode is it feels more like a Breaking Bad finale than a Walking Dead finale. Like they did their big flashy moment last episode with the death of all the like 10 characters or whatever, and then this episode they're using it to do what I liked the Breaking Bad did, which is kind of set up the next season, get all those pieces in a row, and then give us the thing that's going to hook us and go, oh, that's intriguing. I can't wait to see what that's all about. And they did that with that radio transmission you mentioned. I don't know about you, but I'm interested in what that's going to be, because I was listening to it trying to think, oh, is that Alpha on the radio? Is that someone we've heard before? And I didn't recognize the
Georgie
voice.
It didn't sound like Georgie, but it's so garbled and so distorted that it's who knows?
Yeah, so it's pretty effective as a cliffhanger for me. Just thinking, ooh, who could that be and what do they want?
Yeah, looking forward to season 10, which we are not going to be talking about this week, but next week we're going to come back for our feedback episode. Now that we're done with the season, we'll consider what your guys' thoughts are of it, and we'll announce our plans to continue Walking Dead, like when that will happen, when it will be coming back, how are we going to eventually catch up to, if and when season 11 comes out, what kind of way we're going to cover that. We'll be talking about all that in the wrap-up episode that comes next week.
Okay, let's get into the recap.
Let's do it. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think, and to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Thank you. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
We start off with Ezekiel. He has a voiceover that declares the dream of the kingdom dead for some reason. Pipes are bursting as they prep a caravan of courage to leave for Hilltop. Carol remembers Henry as Zeke speaks of the valor of everyone. It's kind of a montage.
Most of this is just King Ezekiel saying generic stuff, like quoting things that don't really apply. And like, who is, when he's talking about the Valiant, who is he talking about the Valiant, the ones they've lost so far? But you know, that's weird to say about the people like retreating, you know, like talk about valiancy and never giving up in the face of like leaving because a pipe broke. Mm-hmm. I do admire, because there was nothing they could really say at this point to explain what exactly was going on with the kingdom. But they did show that they're like, heat is a problem when you're talking about the East Coast where it gets hit by nor'easters and whatnot. So that's a possible problem. And that there's constantly pipes breaking, not being able to have a reliable water source, that's a problem. Then they talk about fires raging out of control, and as they're leaving the kingdom, I saw that most of the human dwellings had their roofs burnt off, and that's like once you lose the structural integrity of a roof, those buildings, human buildings, just don't last very long. You know, one of the whole reasons they covered bridges is because bridges lasted three or four times longer when you put a roof over them that you maintained. So like, you know, I can see like, okay, well, the boiler that provides heat to the campus was broke, so that was already a problem. The pipes froze and burst. Then when a fire broke out, they had no effective way to fight it, like what, a bucket brigade or something, and it just raged out of control. And you know, and maybe it could have been stopped if they had been trading with the Hilltop and they had the blacksmith that could have helped them out and provide them with nails for the roof and stuff. Maybe King Ezekiel just was a little, you know, more showmanship than actual leader. So like these problems kept on getting bigger and bigger and he was just hoping something would happen. I don't know. But I'm glad they kind of left it vague rather than showing something definitively that we just clown on, you know.
I mean,
leave it at the Geordi LaForge level.
It's weird though, like the way that they phrased it almost felt like the fires were an inevitability to me. Like, oh, you know, winter came, the fires spread. the winter fires from I don't know. I guess Eugene setting a single fire in the middle of his living room or something.
Or like, you know, the creosote shit. Then they haven't been keeping their chimneys maintained. They're starting to burn fuel. Maybe some people got careless. Maybe the creosote exploded. And like, yeah, like I said, I mean, I'm going to defend it because like we've been talking about it all fucking season long. But yeah, the kingdom has fallen, you know?
It's loose. The kingdom is dead, though, which is, I guess, the important point. They had to leave the megabus behind, the super bus, which I'm disappointed, you know?
Long live the super bus.
God, you could have chopped the top off that. Imagine the wagon you could build out of a super bus.
You could definitely put a roof on an apartment complex with a super bus roof for sure.
That's
true. Seems like there was some missed opportunities there. But I thought also I liked that, like, we yada yada through a lot of this, the time jump, but they did a good enough job selling me that Carol and Ezekiel and Prince Henry were an effective family unit, that like just seeing Carol go through the birthday cards that we yada yadaed and like the different tokens and things and, you know, finding the Shiva pin, like all that stuff connected with me. You know, combined with I like King Ezekiel. I like his kind of overblown rhetoric. Some would accuse me of having the same pitfall at times. And I him kind of forlornly talking about epic quotes over this like very human grounded stuff, I thought was effective.
Yeah.
Made me wistful for old days gone.
Through the rest of the episode, they do a good job with Carol's, let's say, mental state.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do some pretty good stuff here. Carol's been consistently one of the better characters throughout this entire show.
And this is different from Morgulizing, because like Carol had a whole arc that way she was kind of like white knuckling civilization and trusting people. And then she finally, after years, got into this. And then the idea that a death of a child, which can send relatively well-adjusted, healthy people with resources spiraling, mm-hmm. the fact that that would, you know, cause her to spiral in conjunction with King Ezekiel and her duties as queen, that makes perfect fucking sense. It wasn't her just like, you know, snapping for some reason. And also I think they're going to continue to serve her character well going forward. So, it's sad to see her turn her back on the people who love her, but it makes sense in terms of her character history.
And over the course of this episode, there are kind of two groups, and sometimes it was for me, sometimes difficult to remember which one was where at any given moment, because especially once mm-hmm. I get outside and everything turns to snow, it's like, oh, is that person with that group? You know, mm-hmm. is Negan with them? But I'll try and point those out as we go through.
Also, an important point to notice is that, and I didn't get this the first time I watched it, but the second time, there's a line talking that literal months have passed since the you know, mass beheadings, right? The heads on the pike.
Yeah, you had the snow flurries that were happening at the end of last episode. Right. And then this episode, there's a full-on blizzard. So,
yeah, this feels like late November, December-ish. And that's why it's like Michonne. There's a lot of people that like don't belong at the kingdom that are there, because I feel like the idea is after this attack and they all signed the charter, they started trying desperately to keep things going and keep things working. Mm-hmm. And
it seems like it was... Ezekiel calling up the other communities and say, hey, you want to help me move? That kind of thing, right?
Right, right. I'll buy pizza for everybody. Yeah. One medium pizza. Cheese.
So they're on the road. This is Ezekiel and Carol and Michonne, all of them. They're out on the road. Michonne and Yumiko? I don't know how to say that. Talk about what a shit show the council is. And their alliances, what that's become after in the aftermath of all those deaths. Daryl defends Lydia from Alden's harassment and tries to talk to Carol about her, but Carol is having a hard time forgiving Lydia for Henry's death. Jerry says there's a storm a-coming, and then Zeke decides to travel through the night to the next way station.
Yeah, there's... a lot of stuff that I think is pretty good here. How did you think the Day for Night and Summer for Winter shooting went? Like they're leaning a lot on a very deep blue filter, but I thought mm-hmm. it actually looked really good.
I mean, I don't know that I've seen an episode look this muddy and bad since Game of Thrones had their blizzard episode, The Long Night, I think it was in season 8 or something.
They actually took the trouble to film all that at night. They did not that with Walking Dead at all. This was clearly filmed during the day and during probably the height of summer in Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, other than like it being muddy from time to time, which was the point, mm-hmm. much like that episode of Game of Thrones, it didn't feel like it was a problem.
And I liked that, like, all this, the political stuff they've been doing felt very realistic. Like the fact that Hilltop is relatively politically paralyzed mm-hmm. after losing Jesus, you know, Maggie's gone, then Jesus stepped up, Jesus died, as soon as he got established, Tara was taken down. Mm-hmm. They do feel like it would be entirely plausible for their council to kind of be paralyzed with like a bunch of different competing factions, and they also lost some other pillars of the community, like Rhett Butler, whatever her name is, Gracie or whatever, but the blacksmith's wife. Mm-hmm. That all like really made sense. You get another update on Maggie, that they sent some letters, but they haven't gotten any responses. I also really like the use of the iconic shot. Like, this has been in almost every Walking Dead credit sequence of the zombie walking through the field from way back in season 2, I believe, when Rick and Shane are out driving together. And that was such an evocative scene. It's like, this is just how the world is now. It's like, sometimes you see an amber wave of grain and there'll be a zombie waving through it too. Mm-hmm. But now it's menacing. Because are those just zombies, or are those fuckers wearing skin suits keeping an eye on us? And it's kind of like the subtle way to illustrate the world that we're familiar with here. The Walking Dead has changed, which I really like. And also just Lydia, what a terrible position she's in. She's responsible indirectly, directly, however you want to play it, for the death of the prince, mm-hmm. Perhaps the dissolution of the royal marriage that's kind of held things together. Boston Rob being a dick makes sense because his girlfriend got killed too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Daryl being prickly because like them rejecting Lydia kind of feels like him being rejected in the very beginning too. Like all this stuff are just really, I think the human drama just really is firing on all cylinders. Even like I remember like, man, Ezekiel actually jealous of Daryl. But they deal with this in the next scene, I thought, in a very responsible kind of mature way.
Yeah. For sure. No, a couple of things I like there, like Lydia, you know, saying I just don't want to cause any more problems to Daryl or whatever, is a callback to when, you know, the shitty teens came up to her and said, don't cause any problems. She mm-hmm. feels now like she's been causing problems, right? Big problems, like Henry dying.
And she hasn't caused the problems, but she has been in the nexus of all the problems that these communities have been suffering.
Right. Like, I don't blame her. Like, I blame Alpha. But right. She would blame herself, you know, as a teen who mm-hmm. sees this in crazy ways. For sure. And then the What'd idea when Daryl asks Carol what she sees when he looks at him, you know, it's essentially saying to her, look, if you can get over like the things you see when you look at me, eventually that will happen with Lydia, right? We can make her part of this group.
Mm-hmm. And it's also commentary for her and Ezekiel's relationship, because I think one of the reasons that's kind of gone sour is because it's inextricably bound up with her memories of Henry, you know? So Daryl is kind of like her neutral person that, you know, it's just Daryl, but everybody else is, you know, bound up in the relationship with other people she cared about. And she's hurting. That sucks.
Then we go to Eugene saying, this is over at Alexandria. He says that the solar panels are busted and there's no heating and they've got to go get firewood and let Negan out.
There's some kind of rehabilitation of Eugene's, character here, where they do the beat where he says, oh, we gotta, this is all this, and the heaters are gone tits up and the panels are pushing daisies, and we gotta go to winter one ice storm protocol, and like Rosita kind of rolls her eyes and Gabriel takes a minute and he's like, oh no, actually this I know about this, I'm on the council, Eugene has talked about this and he's smart and we pay attention to him. So he kind of translates into like, okay, yeah, I don't know. Did you feel like that's kind of like the show starting to pivot away from Eugene just being a fool? Like, yeah, Rosita is the old school watcher, but Gabriel's like the new watcher going forward. Like, yeah, he's silly, but he also knows the shit and he saves our lives on several occasions. He thinks about shit that we don't think about and it saves our life again and again.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see that going all the way back to like the sanctuary, right? When Negan puts him in charge of making the weapons, like, okay, you know, he might sound like an idiot, he might look like an idiot, but he definitely knows a couple of things. And I think back then it was all about confidence, right? Like, yeah, he knew the things, but he was too unconfident in himself to step up and actually do things. You know, he's always questioning himself and his image and all that stuff. Nowadays, like after he kind of got in with Rick, it feels like that's where things started to really grow for him. Because Rick, you know, he'd be spouting off all this crazy nonsense, his coded language, and then Rick would just be like, "All right, cool, the bridge, let's get the bridge going." Like he understood what he was trying to say. I felt like that gave Eugene some more confidence.
I wonder if because after I watch this episode, it becomes clear that, like, any of these communities could become kingdom very quickly. Like, you know, here in the wintertime where the daylight is causing the solar cells not to charge properly and they're having to revert to the, you know, mankind's oldest way to keep warm other than just snuggling together is to set a fire. You know, it's not too hard to imagine, like, the whole community is clustered in, like, two or three buildings. One of those buildings catches fire and a third of the population might die.
Yeah.
And plus, you lose a major structure that's, you know, you can't use the next time. I wonder if there's going to be something like next season, because this is the shit I live for. I would love to see Eugene start to replace the 21st century technology of Alexandria. I mean, use it while it's still good, but, like, also, what's your plan?
Yeah.
For when these solar panels inevitably, like, maybe not today, maybe, but sometime in the next 20 years, these solar panels are just not going to work anymore. Mm. And you will have no way to replace or restore them. So, like, what's the plan then? Like, I think, you know, when I see the grain mill and the windmill, like, I like to continue to see more of that stuff. What is stuff that you can actually sustain, you know, for the long haul?
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever hydro system they've got going, I think is cool. Mm-hmm.
They've somehow got a working water mill in the community's ornamental pond. I don't know how that works, but
yeah, I don't know what kind of current you're getting there, but sure. Yeah. But either electrical or hydro.
Yeah, throw a paddle wheel in your apartment complex's retention pond and see how much power you generate with it. But you know, they're trying. They're thinking.
Maybe they'll catch the wind. So then the caravan, this is the hilltop, the people headed for the hilltop, encounters walkers on the road, and Lydia disappears into the woods. Ezekiel asks Daryl to not stay at the hilltop so that he and Carol can kind of get a fresh start without him reminding them of Henry, and mm-hmm. Daryl says nothing.
I like this. Like this, there's no manipulation. It's just a guy making an ask of another guy. It's like, I don't really have the right, you know, but this is what I want to happen. We've had a lot of history. Can you help me out here?
And Daryl's response is perfect too. You know, he just,
yeah,
he's got, like, a process, not shutting that, right?
Like, yeah, he's not shutting him down. He's not saying, I can't believe you'd even suggest such a thing. It's just like, yeah, that is a big ask. I'm gonna have to think about it. And Daryl's not one for words, but
right.
Yeah, I liked it.
Which
it
was, maybe confuses Ezekiel. Like, I'm not sure how well Ezekiel knows Daryl. And so when Daryl just, like, turns his back and walks away, what does Ezekiel think?
It did feel like a little bit of an aggression, but, like, no, I know Daryl, like, I know it's, like, you know,
right.
Not really. It's just, yeah. Like you said, Daryl's trying to process that. But I really like the fresh layer of snow. I thought that looked pretty good, like an early dusting, foretaste of what you're going to get with this nor'easter coming through.
Oh, Jesus.
I was outraged. Oh God, we might have some difference of opinions in the snow stuff, but no, I was wild. Kind of prepared to be outraged that the zombies didn't seem to be affected by the cold and snow. But I think that
eventually
they're telling,
they get around to it. Yeah.
I think that they're telling us this is like their first real heavy cold snap where things are going to start freezing.
You mean long-term over the course of the series? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought they were telling a story of we're maybe deeper in winter and like it's been winter for a little bit, but I think this is the early stages when it's the first real hard freeze and now you're seeing zombies react to it. And, you know, I guess the one false note is it seemed like it surprised everybody. And I'm like, shit, you've been here. You've been in D.C., Baltimore for like 5 years now. You've surely seen a zombie freeze solid, right? Mm-hmm. But I was like, what the if zombies don't freeze, what... What the hell? What the hell, man? They got glycol for blood? Is that part of the zombie infection?
Supernatural.
I don't know. But that objection got retracted pretty quickly.
Speaking of frozen walkers, Lydia finds a walker frozen into a lake and decides she's going to let it bite her. But Carol catches her in the act. And afterward, the weather drives the entire group to take shelter in the sanctuary.
I love Carol's Winter Queen look here with her, like, you know, poncho and hat and everything. I thought it looked kind of homeless chic regal. And also, I kind of think it's neat that they gave Lydia a comic plot from Carol's history. You know, if you'll recall in the comic, Carol dies in the prison. She feeds herself to another zombie because she has no place, you know, she had this abusive husband, you know, that all got wrapped up, and she kind of tried to like find a relationship that works with somebody, and she tried to get with Rick and that didn't work, and she thought nobody loves her, and she'll go to someone that will take her, a zombie. And I thought it was kind of smart, because I think you're supposed to understand that Carol is really empathizing with this young girl who's been abused her whole life and thinks that she's weak and powerless. And like that connection that she makes with Carol in this episode, I think is really crucial and something that, is natural and makes sense. And this is something I really like as a fan of the comics. Like, they take, you know, Angela Kang, apparently, I don't know, maybe this has nothing to do with this, but like, I like to think that she's gone back and read the comics and like, okay, what are some things we didn't use and what are some things we can remix? And like, oh, this is like an alternate version of Carol. It went down this way. Carol will catch her doing that and stop her. I thought that gave it the scene a little bit extra juice for me, but
yeah, that's cool.
And Nicotero loves this shit. Like, the sound design of that zombie snapping with its teeth, I thought was really incredible.
Oh yeah. And there's also the element of like, because Henry sacrificed himself for Lydia, if Lydia goes through with this, it will all have been for nothing. And Carol's watching mm-hmm. that moment, and it's like, yeah, there are a lot of layers in the scene. It's pretty yeah. strong.
And like, it takes Carol a lot of the episode to kind of like process this, because I you know, it'd be entirely fair for her to come in and be like, what the fuck are you doing? Uh-huh. Like, yes, my son dies and you're going to throw. Yeah, I'm sorry. People are mean to you. But like, she didn't. Yeah. It's kind of like she just kind of watches and doesn't judge, doesn't do. I think the Carol stuff is really great in this episode.
So then Negan's happy to be out of his cell, but he can't keep from antagonizing Gabriel over his love life. Judith has lost Daryl's dog, and a clogged chimney causes an explosion, forcing everyone to move to Aaron's house so they can start a fire. The weather outside is straight out of the thing, so they have to form a chain gang to keep from getting lost in it. Here's where my problems begin. Like,
uh-oh.
You got such ferocious weather that the people who have lived in this community for how many years now? At least 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Can't find their way to Aaron's house in a storm. Really?
In whiteout conditions?
Really? Man, there's no landmarks you can use? Like, I don't know. It doesn't... It seems like... look, this is not the fucking South Pole.
Yeah.
You know, there's no monster out there trying to get you. You're apparently not going to freeze to death, and Negan can survive this thing in a t-shirt, in a button-up. It seemed a little much, this storm, the way people reacted to it.
I think that if you could wear some kind of, like, if Mythbusters could test this, like, with some kind of goggles that limited your visibility to 3 feet, like, it would be surprisingly hard to navigate one's neighborhood, I would imagine. Because it doesn't take very long for people to get disoriented. I mean, they did do that in Mythbusters, like tie a blindfold around someone and tell them to walk in a straight line in a field, and like, you can't, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. Like, you get disorientated almost immediately. I know cave divers, yeah. You would think it's impossible to get to decide to lose track of which way is up and down in water, but it happens time and time again to divers. Once the visibility drops to zero, you can't see the bubbles going up, you get disoriented, you get panicked. So I actually thought it was pretty cool, especially when you think about all the kids they got, some elderly people, you know, not all these tools are the sharpest in the shed, perhaps. I thought it was a pretty good survival detail. And I got to say, before we get off stuck on this, it gave me immense pleasure to hear Negan make the same joke I've been making about this love quadrangle. Uh-huh. Like, he even said it. Like, I haven't called it a love rhombus or whatever, but it's like this crazy love quadrangle as his wintertime entertainment. It tickled me. Plus, I also like how no one, it's kind of been defanged a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's, okay, well, you can have your fun, Negan, but like, we're all in the open and happy about it. So die mad, you know, there's, also try being less predictable. You know, maybe if you were a helpful, good guy for a change, it would actually shock us, which he does by the end of the episode. The chimney exploding, perfectly great disaster to get into, makes a lot of sense. It's one of those, like, most, how many people Listen to this podcast, have fireplaces in their homes. When's the last time you had it checked by professional? Do you have it checked every year? Most people don't.
No.
Fucking people's, every year, people's houses burn down because of this shit.
My solution for this, just don't light fires. Don't light fires inside your dwelling. That's my thing.
It's terrible air quality. It actually, there's a lot of studies to show it sucks heat out of the rest of the house. It's a bad idea, but people do it.
Of course, I don't live in the apocalypse where, you know, my solar panels are busted and I need heat. So
people with fireplaces, decorative fireplaces, gonna be laughing out the other side of your mouth come the apocalypse, because you'll be warm and we'll be frozen.
It's true.
But it's the stuff like I felt like people gave thought to things that could happen in situations like this, and it all made sense and kind of led one naturally to the other. So good for you guys. Someone's watched their Little House on the Prairie.
I think they used the wagon from that.
They might have. They honestly might have.
All right. Next scene is Carol feeling like she's lost, losing herself again. She tells Ezekiel that, tells Daryl that Ezekiel only blames him for Henry's death because he can't blame her. But Daryl doesn't want to leave. I don't know. It's another in a long string of good character moments between Daryl and Carol.
Yeah. And they'll really resolve it. I'm really have no clue what is the arc going forward next season.
Feels intentional. So
I'm all in. Yeah.
Feels like they're leaving themselves open to do kind of whatever they come up with in the off season, or came up with in the off season at this point.
Yeah.
So then they're forced to go to another way station because the storm could outlast their supplies that they have at the sanctuary. They have to cross into Whisper territory to make that happen. Ezekiel's not convinced that it's worth it. I was surprised that they have no plan. Zero. Absolutely zero plan. We're months after the incident where 10 of their community members had their heads put on pikes. And they have zero plan, both offense or defense, for dealing with the Whisperers. No one's come together and said, hey, what if the Whisperers decide to go back on this deal and just attack us? We're going to need some way of fighting them. How would we go about that? No one said it. No one in the council, no one in the hilltop, no one anywhere. Really?
Well, but like it has only been a couple months. They did establish the councils have been kind of a logger jam because all the leaders have kind of been dead. And I mean, I don't know that they haven't made any plans to defend themselves.
No way to fight the Whisperers. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Well, he says yeah, we don't know how to fight them, which to me, like, that's A number one on the list, is figure out what we're going to do if the Whisperers come knocking again.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, like I said, but it's been, relatively speaking, a short period of time. They've also, it seems like they had their hands full of disaster. You know, you've had domestic problems at Hilltop. You've had, like, you know, apparently the kingdom turned out to just be a boiler, and the boiler fell, and so did the kingdom. I feel like one of those dipshits that was emailing us in like season 5 and 6. You guys are being too tough on The Walking Dead. Why don't you just, it's not that kind of show, and I'm doing it to you now, Jim. I'm sorry. I just like the show now.
I don't know. I would be planning for this, what seems like an inevitability, when this lunatic wearing skins comes back.
I have a suggestion for the council. You need to differentiate yourself in the committees. You need like a ministry of war or defense. You need a ministry of the interior that talks about improving the community.
Ministry of creosote removal.
Yeah. You need some different departments that can like maybe go in a subcommittee and deal with things in piecemeal, because you all seem like you're trying to do everything all at once. And that's not a recipe for good governance. It doesn't scale very well, for sure. They just signed the charter.
I was going to say, yeah, I've seen the charter they just signed. And it basically says we're all going to try and be cool and good to each other. So maybe they've got a long way to go with the organizational structure.
It's the Bill and Ted charter. Just be excellent to each other. And then wait for Wild Stallion to write a song to unite us all together in peace and harmony and love.
Mm-hmm.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Then in another kind of talky scene here, Zeke regrets waiting this long to give up on the dream of the kingdom, and Michonne regrets all the time that she kept Alexandria in isolation. Now she says that they have to risk this border crossing to get their friends home, so they leave the sanctuary and cross the border.
Yeah, like the idea that, you know, Michonne realizing this time apart made us weaker, but and she points out poignantly that, like, Alpha would have never been able to do her shit had they had remained a tight knit community where everybody knew each other.
Yeah.
And how that, like, we have to get back to seeing, like, it's not Ezekiel's people and Michonne's people and Maggie or Tara's people. These are all our people who were jointly responsible. And we're accountable to each other, not just to ourselves and our people, but to everybody. This common cause, good governance stuff is, I like a lot. It was nice seeing them talk about it.
No, you really have to have some kind of unity to have any functional government. And that's what they were lacking. Hopefully they're going to get back to that. And I like Ezekiel's side of this too. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I think that's eventually the strength that'll win the war against the Whisperers, because, you know, Alpha rules by fear and intimidation and the fact that the vast majority of her foot soldiers have no brains at all. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, used as tools. But, like, I do think that, you know, the Alexandria and Hilltop Kingdom alliance of free-thinking, hardworking individuals working out of mutual respect and love, I want to say that that'll beat the authoritarian regime every time. I'm pulling for them, let's put it that way.
Yeah, me too. But, yeah, Ezekiel's side of this. I like this because this is one of the things that they've done pretty well, you know, with the whole fall of the kingdom stuff being so bad. The Ezekiel side of it, like him not wanting to give up on this dream of the kingdom, right? Like, okay, maybe I don't know why the kingdom is failing, but the kingdom is failing. They've told me that. Ezekiel doesn't want to give up on it. And now, because he didn't give up on it sooner, they're in this dire situation, right? It's brought them to where they might not even make it. They have to take enormous risks now, going through the Whisperer's territory, possibly bringing war to all of the people that they're now united with. Because he wasn't seeing the future enough. He was believing too much in this dream that was clearly not going to happen, you know. And and Carol in this moment, you know, not going to tell him I told you so, but also that's, I don't know if that's how people feel about it, but that's kind of the situation they're in. And
yeah,
I don't know. I thought it was pretty good writing to bring that back in this moment.
I agreed. I'm just amazed at how different everything feels. Everything feels more important and substantial. And the fact that they can turn this around in less than a season,
right?
Because like I feel like the first three episodes of this season felt of a piece of the, you know, there was like it's better, but like, you know, they've stitched together a couple good episodes before, but like this sustained run of like everything kind of like building up and character arcs intertwining and things logically going from this and that and the other, not just being built around like, what's the set piece? What are we doing this episode? Oh, we're going to go through a caved in highway. Yeah, that's the ticket. Like it just feels so much better. I would not have believed you could turn it around this quickly, but I don't know. It feels very similar to the jump that Star Trek made between like season two and season three, The Next Generation. And it turns out that was all writing room stability and like good practices. So something to it.
And I really like when they go to cross this border, how, you know, ominous this is. They walk up, they see the sticks, and the sticks are still darkened with the blood of their friends. Right. It's a nice touch. It tells you like the consequences that they're about to take on going through this.
It feels like a real dangerous border you're crossing. Absolutely. Even without the head still there. It's like, oh, geez. Yeah.
Yeah. So Gabriel and his chain gang navigate the Arctic Circle searching for shelter. Judith hears Daryl's dog barking and runs off after it. And Negan runs off after her. I'm surprised here. Judith goes off. Negan goes off after her. No one else decides they're going to go off when the madman, the butcher of Anderson Station here, goes off after the young girl.
I think they were trying to hold the line, because then like the next scene where Negan's looking for Judith, you hear other people looking for Judith and Negan. I just think it's like, now
but when you can't see 3 feet in front of your face, man.
Right. Like, why was Negan the only one that instantly let go of the line and went after the little girl? That is an interesting question.
He's the only one who cares enough, apparently.
He's the only one that's like a man. Like, this is this going back to like, Shane, man of action, versus Rick, man of thinking about things through? There's good and bad points about both, but like, I think they're establishing Negan as the former. He is not going to think too much about consequences. He's going to react. And in this case, turns out that he's a kind of a lowercase H hero because of it. Yeah, I like the redemption of Negan. I think it makes a lot of sense that he was never necessarily an evil person. He just lost his mind a little bit in the apocalypse, like so many people did, found the thing that kind of worked and decided that that's the way the world worked now. And just the same way that Alpha did in the... And were it not for this extraordinary situation of Rick taking him prisoner and holding, like, he would have never made this progress. It's fucking crazy. But I do like that they're, I do like his redemption. I want to believe. I want to believe a man like Negan with the proper time and attention and program could be brought back to the light.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, you know, when Michonne's group is out there and they're crossing this border, how much danger is there really? Like, there's two sides to it, right? So you can't see 6 inches in front of your face with this storm, which means you're very, very unlikely to get caught out here by the Whisperers. Extremely. Like, it provides you a lot of cover. So that's positive. But also, you're very unlikely to see if you're walking right into them. You know, you could be walking into a herd.
Literal herd, yeah.
Yeah, a herd of walkers, of straight up walkers, not even Whisperers. That could fuck you. You could also be walking straight up into a Whisperer camp and not know it until you're a foot away from them, and then suddenly it's on. Yeah, I'm torn about this winter scene, because in some ways it seems like, oh, these people are so dumb. In other ways, it's like, oh, yeah, this provides a lot of tension and drama.
It's funny because, like, I watched this, like you said, 2 weeks ago and got my notes, and I watched it again this morning. In between, I watched the Tom Hanks movie Greyhound, which is all about submarine combat, and it brought back, it had a lot of that same kind of feel. And I'm just now hearing you talking about it, I understand why, because it's like the unseen enemy. Like, this is open ocean, and, you know, it's a lot of it to provide safety, but also you just never can know. There's this tension. Like, every single time they could come across a herd or the Whispers, the zombies being frozen, but like not quite, and like maybe ones in a snowbank could still remain warm enough to like pop. That shit just I thought was great. It's a really ingenious. When you talk about all the fireworks happening last episode, and I understand what you mean by that, but like this is one of the more satisfying set pieces. Just this march across the Whisperer territory in its totality that the show's done.
So Michonne's group is also now in the seventh layer of Arctic Hell. They stumble on some frozen walkers, which freaks them out. They eventually make it to the frozen river, where Carol splits off to find Lydia while the others cross. And while she's gone, there are a whole bunch of walkers who rise up out of the snow to terrorize them. But they're able to fight them off pretty easily, and they cross the river to wait for Carol.
Yeah. That felt about right.
I mean, like if you don't understand like the insulating properties of snow, I could see why maybe you might think, oh, why aren't these walkers frozen under the snow? It's because they're actually warmer under that snow than a walker standing up.
It's like I love watching survival shows. That's like winter survival 101. If you have no shelter, throw yourself in a snowbank, try to form an air pocket, and that you heat up the air pocket, the snow melts around you, and then it actually is a very good insulator. So that all kind of, like I can see like people like, oh, what the hell? These zombies are frozen. Ones are popping out of snow, good to go. But it kind of is like someone did some research or, you know, again, watch Little House on the Prairie or Survival Man to find those details out.
I guess it makes me wonder about the body temperature of the walkers, like steady state body temperature. Are they warm blooded still?
I bet it's like, you know, like you have you ever put your hand inside like a compost pile? Like it gets really hot. The decay generates some like that chemical process generates heat. I wouldn't surprise me if they're slightly warm because of their decay.
That makes sense.
I mean, that goes to a certain point because once they get skeletal, then there's not much left to kind of keep them. But like, I think, like I said, who knows? This is like warp core breaches. Like, what the hell? Like, I can't judge the science of the undead, but I felt like it was okay. Now, I do wonder.
I'm just trying to get my canon straight. Like, are they warm? Or are they cold? Yeah. Are they? What does it feel like to touch a walker?
I do wonder, though, when the Whisperers get back to their territory, when they see all these zombies dead from, like, shattered heads and, like, sword strike, like, they're leaving an awful lot of evidence of trespass behind.
I kept expecting at the very end of this episode to, like, do the slow zoom in, right, on this serene wilderness scene, and then you see, like, Daryl left a boot behind or something, right?
Yeah.
And that'd be the thing that tips him off.
Daryl's other angel wing fell off and
that last stitch finally gave way.
Yeah. There's only one man that has wings like these.
Okay. I do find it hilarious because, you know, we're talking about like, oh, they get lost in the town and you got this storm where you can't see in front of you and it'd be hard to navigate. No problem navigating across vast stretches of wilderness. No problem whatsoever in the same blinding storm. They can navigate across the entire Whisperer territory. Gabriel can't navigate next door. It's just hilarious.
Well, he's only got the one eye. It's got that milky eye.
Maybe somebody else should have been leading that rope.
Yeah, maybe. When they appointed him as leader of the community, they didn't realize that it would be literally him trying to feel his way through a snowstorm with one eye and no depth perception. But hasn't been eating any carrots lately. His night vision's shit. Just terrible all around.
Damn. Then Carol finds Lydia, who says that she wants to die so this war can end, and asks Carol to kill her. She doesn't. She does the thing where she stabs past her, kills a walker.
Yeah, like, I mean, we've already kind of covered this ground, but like it's so they did such a phenomenal, and they don't ever say this. They never say this. They rely on you knowing Carol. At this point, 9 years of history of Carol and where she came from, her arc, to understand that like Carol, when she sees Lydia, sees scared Carol Peltier from season one and season two cowering at her husband's shadow and like, you know, completely bought into his bullshit system of things and look at her now. And again, this is all show, not tell. And it's all the, you know, Melissa McBride's acting. And I don't know who this Lydia lady is, but she's actually capable of doing some pretty heavy lifting dramatically so far, it seems. Yeah, no, I like it. And I feel like now she's got a new purpose. like redeeming Lydia and maybe not even redeeming her, helping her get to where she's at minus some of the bullshit baggage that she's had too. I think is like going to be Carol's new purpose going forward. She lost Henry, but like, what can she do? What can this girl become if she helps her? What kind of boon to the community could she be? And I think that's really that's got me hooked.
And I think at the same time, there's also the question of, does Carol want to kill her? Because she rightly could. And we've seen her kill children before, right? Look at the flowers, sure. Lydia, right?
Yep. There's that part of it, too, that, like, Carol's ice fucking cold. If this is going to be better for the community, like, executing those sick people at the prison, man, like, fucking Carol can get it done.
Right.
You need to burn a whole pack of ex-saviors that are getting a little too handsy with the travelers. Like, Carol's the person, the Terminator, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's... But it's like, somehow, by helping Lydia, she's also healing herself, which, you know,
that happens. Yeah, no, I think that's what creates that real tension, because she's seen both sides of that. She understands both sides, and the question becomes which one of those is going to make the decision for her. So Daryl somehow wanders off and gets overrun by two walkers. I don't even know how this happened. Daryl was just like going to take a piss. How did Daryl get away from
the
group?
They're trying to organize like the civilians into a crossing party, and I think Daryl was like trying to protect the perimeter to give them that opportunity to get it, because everyone, all the women and children, old people, non-fighters have to like go across one by one, and you know, Daryl's kind of roaming around taking out the zombies to give them that. It's what I got. But what'd you think of the icicle kill?
He pulls a Die Hard 2 here, yeah, and he stabs a walker through the eye with an icicle.
It's pretty good.
It's good, yeah, for sure.
Like that's every 5 year old,
right?
Every 5 year old, I've got pictures of Jack from like all ages of him holding these things like daggers. Like everybody, sure. Like, he's like, what that act? Could he kill somebody with this? Well, he can kill a soft melon headed, sun ripened walker that's got a little bit of a shell of ice on it. You can definitely kill one of them with it.
Absolutely. Carol,
it's just cool as hell. And I think God bless Nicotero for giving us stuff that's just cool as hell every once in a while.
Sure. Can we go back to Lydia and Carol, and Carol refuses to kill Lydia, no matter what, how much she begs. She takes her hand and leads her back to the group. But yeah, all that stuff that you said about, you know, her feeling bad for the abuse that Lydia suffered under, she gets it.
And the whole, you're not weak. And I know that because I wasn't weak. I was like way stronger than a lot of people that hadn't gone through this shit. It's just, part of that abuse made me feel that way. It's great. Again, none of that spelled out. It's just like, you know, single tear running down her cheek. You're not weak. Grab your hand, take you back to the group. Beautiful. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Minimal storytelling. Love it. Or I should say minimalist, not minimal, because it's a lot of story being told.
Next up is Negan getting injured looking for Judith, but eventually he finds her and he finds the dog and he carries her back to Alexandria. I guess he carries both. Well, he carries her and he leads the dog back.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he would at least close up his jacket when he's running around outside. Like, he's not got his jacket buttoned. He's in the middle of a blizzard, and it's just flapping wide open. And then he takes it off and gives it to Judith. I don't understand. So she's already bundled up, right? Enough to make this journey that they've set out on. He gives her his coat to make her just probably sweltering in that stuff.
I think she's early stage hypothermic because she's starting to like lose consciousness and like be weak.
But I don't understand why. Like, being away from the group, does that really affect smaller. You that she's, much?
Well, I mean, you lose heat. Like, was it like an inverse square rule? Like, the bigger you are, the slower you lose heat because, like, you know, there's less surface area to internal volume. Like, you know, mice have to worry about freezing to death. Elephants, not so much, kind of thing. So I think that she just like, cools off faster. I don't know. Like I said, I and also they're none of them are dressed for this weather.
Yeah.
Like speaking of Little Prairie Days, like they are not wearing Gore-Tex like multi-layer. This is all like a bunch of denim and flannel and Little House on the Prairie shit. And people died all the time of exposure. Got frostbite all the time back then. So, yeah, like I was looking at, she's wearing like little thin knit mitten or, you know, like gloves. Like, yeah, she's going to probably lose fingers. So,
I mean, once he takes off his coat, I was like, well, he's done. There is no way.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, he's got like a minute or two to get back to a group or something, or he's going to freeze to death. And And I like that's it's this clip flip of the coin historic of The Walking Dead where they realize the implications of anything they're doing. And also, I also kept on thinking, like, one of the reasons he's taking his coat off is because probably secretly it's 85 degrees, 90% humidity in Atlanta. And he's like burning his, he's like sweating his ass off.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like, get this damn thing off. But like, yeah. He's trying to get like, you know, like joking about the dog pooping gold nuggets and throwing the language stuff back at her. Like I said, it's Negan being heroic, and I'm here for it.
I assumed that when Negan got his leg injured and he's limping around, that they were going to pull like a end of Night of the Living Dead kind of thing where they mistake him for a walker and kill him.
Oh, why?
In the whiteout conditions, right?
Yeah. I didn't know that. I haven't seen that, so like I wasn't aware. But that's that would have definitely added spice to it.
There's too much to do with him. Like he's still an interesting character. You want to keep him around, undoubtedly. But it would have been a really nice homage.
It would have been a nice way to take him out, honestly. Because there's some interesting things you can do with him. But the most interesting thing you've done with him, you've kind of already done: redeem him, make him a symbol far beyond what Rick would ever like. Dying to save her and having some Alexandria person kill him because he thinks he's a walker, that would be.
Yeah, now it's all about like,
pretty
will
amazing.
The community accept him in? You know,
yeah.
How open is this community going to be? Are they going to be open to the man who killed so many of their friends, terrorized them for so long?
And is Negan going to realize that, like, what a long road he has to walk, and, you know, how flexible is he going to be, you know, when he's talking, quote unquote, leader to leader with people? That all remains to be seen.
All right. Michonne's group makes it to Hilltop. Everyone except for Carol, that is. Her spirit didn't make it. She has no idea who she is anymore. She's decided that she's going to Alexandria in the morning. She gives her ring back to Ezekiel. Wow.
Yeah, and he bids her keep it. The hurt in poor Ezekiel's face. I've always been kind of a sucker for Ezekiel and Carol. I've always been rooting for them when they first started kind of like doing the matchy-matchy will they, won't they. But this whole, I know you have to do this. I'll never stop loving you. I'll never regret the fairy tale. That's really good dialogue and touching. And then her trying to give the ring back as if he can be freed of her somehow. And him rejecting it is great. And I can't, goddamn, I really want to see season 10, like right now, but I think it's bad for the podcast if I just go ahead and watch the whole damn thing and do a real retro rewatch. So I'm going to refrain. Unfortunately, the schedule's tightening up to kind of prevent me from getting too tempted, but it's good stuff. It's a great place to leave the show.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned him earlier, but I'm digging these zombie heads exploding. Daryl, at the beginning of this scene, bashes one right outside the Hilltop, and it explodes.
T-1000s them. It's pretty neat.
If I were them, I'd have like an over-under on what day of the year the zombie that's out there melts enough to fall over. It'd be like a snowman, right? Like, what day is the snowman gonna fall over because it's melted so much? I don't know.
They did this some like over in our old haunt Beaver Island. I think they like drag an anchor out to the middle of the harbor, and the first day it falls through, they have like a celebration.
Nice,
something like that. Fun. That'd be the first time the zombie walks away. You know, like have that's when winter's officially over. Uh-huh. It's like an actual useful Groundhog's Day kind of thing.
Right. Jerry tries to rename the Hilltop Kingdom the Hilltop to King Top. I think
taking top billing right away. This isn't diplomacy, Jerry. This is a hostile takeover.
The other,
come on.
If you want to give the Hilltop top billing, it would be Hilldom. And I think that's not great.
Yeah. No, I think you're just the kingdom in exile, Jerry. Much respect for you, the quilted mountain, but you need to slow your roll on taking top billing of the Hilltop, I think.
Yeah.
That could be seen as an aggressive act.
And this next scene makes me wonder if Negan has maybe earned some trust back by risking his life to save Judith. It's the next day, and Michonne's group arrives back at Alexandria. She's greeted by her children, and everyone gets into a snowball fight. And then Michonne goes to talk to Negan to thank him for saving Judith. And Negan asks about the well-being of everyone, which Michonne is skeptical of. And they have a short conversation about how the group came together, and some other things. You know, it's really a conversation of like, how is Negan gonna work his way back into this group?
I mean, he's rhetorically pretty strong here. Like, he talks about cutting through the territory. It's ballsy, and she's like, you know, common enemy, common goal. And she retorts like, or fighting evil brings good people together. And he says same thing, because no one ever thinks they're evil. And he's talking about himself here, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, that was always his whole shtick. Like, yeah, you hate me, but like, without someone like me, none of this multi-community shit works. You need a strong man on top. Mm-hmm. Well, he was proven wrong. But like, he's trying to say like, hey, I never did these things because like, it got me jollies or whatnot. I think that's probably a little bit of a lie. I definitely think he enjoyed the power trip. But it gives Michonne some things to think about. And, like, obviously the stunt, you know, this flair for the dramatic he has earned him a little bit of respect from her as well. Mm-hmm. And she gets her dig in about, like, the sanctuary being a total shithole. And he's like, hey, why do you think I came back to Alexandria, you know?
Exactly.
I already tried to make it work with a party of one, let alone, like, 30 or 40 people. It's pretty good.
And then we go to a somewhat puzzling scene. Beta ritually removes Alpha's mask and begins whipping her arms with the switch, which is apparently part of some plan they have. So, I mean, just so many questions. Like, where did they go for the winter? When exactly is this taking place? Because it doesn't look very cold.
Are we back?
Are we back, or did we go away? Is this like some other place? We don't even know.
But if it's some other place that's just warmer, why the melting snow? What's why I thought that they were trying to tell the story of, like, this is a, so it's like, is this next spring? Did they not leave?
It's got to be, because he says the time away has been good, has done you good or something like that.
Yeah, so it's like, it's post-winter, but then they close. I feel it's a mistake to open the Zeke's voiceover and then end, because to me that tells me that like all of these things took place at the same time. Mm-hmm. Okay, but now you got Alpha and the snow's melting and they're talking about the time away has been good. Like, so many ways you can interpret that. And of course it's all Georgia. Nothing ever looks regionally distinct. There's not like, you know, is there no place in Georgia that looks like it's not fucking Georgia? That you could, you know, it could plausibly be some other place, like put some palm trees or I don't know, something up, get some Spanish moss, hang them in the trees. So it looks like they've gone someplace a little warmer. Uh-huh. Or, you know, maybe the problem is, I don't know, but it is confusing because like one of those two things is true. They either went away or they came back or something and time has passed, but like, I don't know. This is Greg. Greg Nicotero mastering the day for night or the night. Yeah. The day for night, not mastering the transitions of time jumps and things like that.
Yeah.
The changing of weather, still something he struggles with.
They needed some other scene. Cause I was thinking like, okay, do you reorder these last two scenes? Cause these last two scenes are both taking place sometime in the future, an unspecified amount of time. Do you reorder them? Does that work better? No, because then you still have this hard cut from like just a conversation that they're having casually, you know, with Michonne and Negan to Ezekiel on the radio in a different season. So like, you need something there to say, hey, time is passing. And
you know
a title card that just says like 3 months later is so bad and dumb.
I think you take out the Alpha and Beta scene, you have the Ezekiel signing off and the radio static, and then post credits, you come back with Alpha and Beta. And I feel like that would have done it, because that feels like a Marvel movie. Like this was all part, we're done with this. Now we'll set up, time has passed, things are happening. Our other group has not lay fallow and done nothing. Because if you can't put this before, you can't establish the fact that the group is away, because then all this sneaking through the Whisperer's territory doesn't work at all. Like, none of the tension is there.
I think you're right. You put that after the credits, that whipping scene, the switch scene. But also, I think you take Ezekiel's monologue here, his speech to Judith over the radio, and you lay it over just like ice melting or something, or something to indicate visually that like the season is changing. And then I have really no problem with that.
Yeah. Or you could have the pack like, I guess that wouldn't work. Yeah. I like what you're. Yeah. I think there's things they could have done.
Have that walker melt better and fall over.
There you
like
go.
We were talking
there
about,
you go.
Right?
Yeah. Perfect. But you're right. They had essentially two like exclamation points they wanted to end the season with, and they're just like almost mutually incompatible from a narrative visual storytelling standpoint.
Yeah, you know, splitting them up with the credits would have been perfect, though, I think.
Mm-hmm. I did. We really glanced over this because it's a transitional scene, but I really really enjoyed the snow fight. Yeah, the snowball fight with Daryl and the kids and everybody, like Jerry and his kids having, because like we haven't had a lot of fun this season. And I kind of got like choked up just watching like Daryl, like I can't recall seeing Daryl that like kind of happy and like joyous. He's back in Alexandria again. Like it felt good. It was a nice shot of optimism and hope before we go back into the despair that the show tracks in. But like, goddamn, it was nice. It was nice for them to just go for it. And it was cool. And plus RJ, Rick Jr. got some several dozen seconds of screen time.
Okay.
Amazing. Love it. Want to see more of it? Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see what he turns into. I'm sure they're going to do another time jump maybe for this last season. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. As everybody knows by now, I'm sure the show has been canceled, right? We're going to get 11 seasons and that's going to be it.
That's it.
They're going to do more spinoffs. I don't know what the state of the show is currently, like at the end of season 10. Really, no one does. I don't think the finale of season 10 is aired yet. But
it won't happen until next month. But
what do they do with
that's
one more season?
It sucks. I would love to catch up enough that we could watch the finale together. But there's some exciting. Yeah. Maybe we can talk about that next week, too, because one of the spinoffs sounds kind of exciting is a Carol Daryl spinoff.
Yeah.
That could be very cool in the right hands. So... yeah, no, I'm. It feels good that we got another, by all accounts, good year of Walking Dead ahead of us, and then we'll get one more supersize, almost a year and a half of Walking Dead to kind of wrap things up with, and hopefully we'll have caught up, and maybe we can cover that in real time. We'll see.
Yeah, and the last thing that I had to say about you know, this morale boosting speech with Judith over the radio is they finally got. You know, they're showing us a little bit of progress that's being made here, right? You had so many setbacks. But this getting the radio established, the radio communication is huge, right? Both symbolically.
Massive.
And also logistically. And thematically. It shows everybody's coming together.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of long-range communication shrinks the globe. It's one of the reasons that the 21st century looks so much different than previous centuries on the planet. So they are now getting back to that radio age, and it's going to mean a lot in terms of defense, in terms of cooperation, and also probably I hope they use it to kind of like give you know, keep relationships going between the different communities, because like a lot of times it felt like when Michonne would leave Alexandria, go to Hilltop, like all that shit just kind of grounds to a halt. Well, now you can have, you know, these conversations across the ham radio and keep those relationships moving forward.
Yeah. Maybe start integrating some of the other communities into the council instead of just having it be all Alexandria.
Well, and you have or you have a truly federal type government where, you know, Hilltop, Alexandria, they all have their governments. But then you have representatives that go to like a higher, you know, level of government to make joint decisions.
It's what she wanted when she wrote the charter, right?
That's so, what I'm talking about. Yeah. And fucking all that nitty gritty civics government stuff. Love it. Love it. I will never get bored with delving into weird apocalyptic cultures, governments, technology. More of it. Yeah. Like a three episode arc of Daryl just doing Survivor Man shit. I would watch it. It'd be my favorite episode of all time.
All right. Let's do it. Season 11.
Little Daryl on the prairie.
I mean, you got to do something with Daryl to set up the spinoff, right?
And they kind of have him, like, he might go, like, I don't know, like, I had a feeling that maybe him and Carol settled down in the Carol cabin of sadness and solitude.
Right. right?
But now he's throwing snowballs and shit. Like, I feel like maybe not. Maybe he'll, it's his time to rejoin the community and Carol's time to kind of go with Lydia and, I don't know, maybe they all go, oh, that'd be kind of cool. Go ship Lydia and Carol off to the all women seaside organization.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not going to hear from them, right? They're done. They're over.
I don't know.
They probably aren't even in season 10, if I had to guess. Maybe you see the signature on the charter.
Well, I mean, you know, the whatever, this nor'easter, it just wiped them out. Just why is a midwinter hurricane. It just like Oceanside is, they're like the Roanoke colony. They're just fucking gone.
Huh. We'll see. Hopefully they're mentioned.
Speaking of gone, are we done here?
We're done. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for watching. Thanks for coming back for everyone that did. I know a lot of people, this was a treat for a lot of people. It's a treat for me. Walking Dead unironically boosted my mood throughout this long, shitty summer. And it was oftentimes a highlight of my week. I was really glad to. And the thing is, it's like, I'm so glad, because if this show had sucked, it'd be torture. But like, I really had a lot of fun. I'm so glad that everybody came back and was enjoying what we're doing here. We will be back for next week to consider one last final mailbag, talk about our plans for the future, talk about plans The Walking Dead has, because there's all kinds of spinoffs, movie deals and stuff that I've been looking at. We'll be talking about all that. Please send in your feedback to watchingdead@baldmove.com so we can talk about it. We already have quite a bit that's been dripping and drabbing over the last couple weeks. But yeah, we'll have one final wrap up for season 10 where we'll talk about the future of Bald Move and Walking Dead. Hopefully you'll join us then next week. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.